Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1 with Allcare Pharmacy. Get expert advice from your friendly healthcare team at Allcare Pharmacy, Ireland's largest community pharmacy network.
Over a year ago, right, my next guest was on the show talking about his life in five songs, and he got an enormous response. And really, we kind of only scratched the surface on that occasion in terms of his wisdom about life. So we've asked him to come back again to talk about, I suppose, the lessons he's learned down the years in his extraordinary life. Music superstar Chris de Burgh, good to see you again.
Gosh, what an introduction. Thank you very much. Good to see your smiling face. Can I ask a favour of your listeners before we kick off?
Okay.
Is I've had this melody in my head for months and I can't figure out where it comes from. I think it might be a hymn, usually I can figure it out pretty quickly, but it goes like this. Da 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 da. So if any of your listeners know what that is, I would be thrilled.
It's not Waltzing Matilda, no. It tipped into Waltzing Matilda there. Okay. Just give it to us one more time for people
who
might have, yeah.
Da 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 da. Now there is a song called White Wings, which I tend to keep kind of going into, but it's not that one. I think it's a hymn.
Okay.
So please help me out there. This keeps me awake.
Do you know what? It was worth it for the timbre of your voice, the effortlessness which it comes out. You know, most of us strain to sing, but you just get out of the way and it comes.
Well, I've just been on I finished a tour in the UK and Ireland, and I hope to think that my voice is in good shape. In fact, tonight I'm singing in the National Concert Hall with a group of ladies called Sea Change. And they are ladies who created a world Guinness Book of Records thing, Dip in the Nip. I think about 1,000 of them.
Oh, yeah.
I thought they wanted me to join them, but I declined. But in fact, it'll be on stage tonight in aid of cancer. Most of them, some of us touched by cancer in every family, I think. And this is a group of people who are survivors or people who know others. And it's 8 o'clock tonight in the National Concert Hall. So I hope my voice is going to be in good shape for that.
I've got a really helpful text already. Yes, it's a hymn, well known, but I can't remember the name. Okay, come on, people, we can do this. We've got it. We've got 25 minutes or here. We can do this by the end. How did the tour go? I believe your mother came to see you in Wexford at the grand age of, is she 99?
She's been 99 in June. The tour went extremely well. In fact, all last year, they're all solo shows. They're all sold out, and this year as well. My mum came to the first show in Wexford, the Opera House, on Thursday last week. And that's a lovely photograph of her leaving in a wheelchair, smiling and talking to somebody. And I had a moment, and I have to tell you, there was tears in my eyes because I announced, you know, not only 50 years in the music business, but to have your mother nearly 99 years old in the audience.
Yeah.
And I pointed up to the balcony and I said, she's up there. And everybody turned around and applauded. I mean, it was, and even now I'm thinking about that moment. She always used to come in a bus from Wexford to my RDS shows, quite a few of them. I did 12 shows in a row in the RDS back in the time. And in fact, Alan, your assistant here, he's remembered.
Alan is not my assistant. Just clear that one up. My colleague.
Well, he's your colleague.
Yeah.
11 years old, he came to the RDS and he remembered things about the gig. But my mum used to go. She came to the Royal Albert Hall for a show there. And it's just a great thing if you have a parent still alive, even at that age.
Yeah. And it still matters to you that your mum was there. Yeah.
Go and see them. Don't just rely on social media.
Yeah. What's her favourite Chris de Burgh song?
In a country churchyard, there's a preacher with his people.
Yeah, good choice.
That
good
one.
Good choice, yeah. And then you're off to Australia and Germany then after a few weeks break. So you still love being off touring, do you?
Well, I think, Brendan, you have to have two things for a long career. Obviously, a modicum of talent. But most of all, you have to have people out there who want to see what you're doing and hear what you're doing. And to them, I say thank you for your years of love and support, because without them, I could not be doing what I'm still doing now. And yes, Australia beckons, Melbourne, Brisbane, the Gold Coast, and then two shows in Sydney, the Sydney Opera House. Again, all these are sold out. I'm very excited about being back in Australia.
Yeah, isn't it fantastic that you can still sell out the Sydney Opera House and everything? You're a lucky man. So we asked you to reflect on your life and to distill five or six lessons or nuggets of wisdom that you'd like to share with us. And I have no idea or no forewarning of what they are. So where will we start?
I'm delighted. Well, the first one I would say, I'm not a sort of life guru or something. I don't have the answers. But 50 years traveling the world, I was born in Argentina, lived in Africa, Malta, the UK, and of course here in Ireland. And what I've discovered is so obvious, but people forget, that everywhere in the world, people are the same. They want to have a peaceful life. They want to bring up a family. They want to enjoy not having their neighbours attacking them. People are identical. We have the same dreams and aspirations. For example, dreams, if I can just refer to something that happened to me the other day.
Yeah.
I was talking about it on stage about three occasions in my career where I've literally, my jaw has hit the floor, listening to a voice. The first one was Eva Cassidy when she sang Fields of Gold and Somewhere Over the Rainbow. And I remember calling my office in London saying, I've just heard a voice. I want to do a duet with this lady. And I was told she'd actually died of some kind of cancer, aged 32, I believe. The second time I heard a voice that really stopped me in my tracks was in my home in Enniskerry. I've now moved to Dorky, by the way. But there was a group of my younger son's friends, Michael, from St. Gerard's School. They came round to have a barbecue. And there were about six of them. They're still great pals, which I love to see in as the years go on. They go on holidays together and so on. But there was a young lad there who I heard, he was aged about 16 or 17, played the guitar a bit. So I thought, I'll do this. Pulled out the guitar, I sang a song to him. I said, right, sing a song. And it blew my head off. His name was Andrew Hosier Byrne. Hosier.
Okay. Yeah.
And there he was sitting in my garden. And he sang at Rosanna's wedding as well. But that really stopped me in my tracks. And the third time was there's a lovely singer called Paul Byram. I don't know if you come across a wonderful singer.
Yeah.
He did a Christmas concert, a couple of them actually. And there was a young girl came on called Leah Barneville. And she was early 20s and a voice that just stopped everybody. We're up on the feet. So she came on stage with me in Cork last week because she was working, she's studying in Cork. And again, the same thing happened, just outstanding, beautiful voice. And at dinner afterwards, with my wife and my assistant, Chris, everybody who works for me is called Chris, by the way.
Yeah.
I said to her, this is part of the life lessons, I suppose.
Yeah.
I said to her, what are your dreams? What are your aspirations? And I would say this to anybody in whatever profession. Have a dream. Have something to aim for. Aim for the stars, even if you only get halfway there.
Yeah.
You've exceeded your horizon, and I would say that to anybody. And
What was your dream when you were starting out? Like, how ambitious were you in your plans for world domination?
Well, I came from a family that didn't have any interest in music, so it kind of came to me late in life, in my early teens. World domination, indeed. When I left university in Dublin Trinity, I sang in Captain America's cookhouse for a while.
Yeah.
And I just had this, I guess you could call it a burning ambition. And I'll never forget one incident that happened to me years ago in the west of England when I was writing for my Spanish Train album, I think. And I'd gone to a little cottage in the Cotswolds, no, it can't be the Cotswolds, anyway, somewhere in the West, that Supertramp, a band that I became very much involved with for years, they'd been working in, and I went to stay there on my own for 3 weeks. And at night, I'd go to the local pub and have a drink, and everybody would just ignore me. And I remember one day being in there saying, one day you will know who I am.
Yeah.
One day, and there was this fire inside. And that's what kind of kicked me into the beginning of that career, you know. Interesting.
Because I've seen you say that it is in failure that you find out who you are.
Yeah, that's another thing. You've obviously been reading my script here.
Okay, so that was one of them. Yeah, tell me.
No, it's success and failure. I think to understand success, you really have to appreciate failure. We heard earlier about boxing and George Foreman, and he would know, being knocked over, what you do is you get up again. And this business that I'm in, the music business, is brutal. And there's only one of me. I'm the engine that keeps everything going, the writing the songs, doing all the interviews, doing the concerts and so on. And you put yourself up, you become very vulnerable.
Do you? Yeah.
And so having, I suppose, learned early in my life, going to a boarding school called Aravon School, and that time it was in the English public school mold of making people become soldiers of the empire. Cold baths first thing in the morning. I went there 7.5 years old, by the way. Beatings and so on. You learned not to show your feelings. And so the same thing happens, I think, in life, certainly for me. Keep those emotions in and make sure that people do not see your vulnerability. And I think if you can also carry this strength through, it helps you through the failure.
So you think actually that, you know, these days now it's all about like show some vulnerability and stuff. And even when you look at the musicians nowadays, their relationship with the kids is very much based on them showing their flaws and their vulnerabilities and, you know, all that. You think that a bit of that old fashioned keep your vulnerability in and, you know, be tough. Yeah.
I think certainly in my career, yes.
Yeah.
But in my family life, absolutely the opposite. I remember my kids saying, come on, Dad, stop hugging me, please. And I believe that you must not bring the rock star into the house. You just stop it right there at the door.
Yeah.
And become an ordinary dad. I mean, I'm very proud of my three children, Rosanna, and what she's been through and her attitude towards life.
Hasn't Rosanna turned into an extraordinary person in a way that nobody possibly thought she would have when she was starting out? You know, this Miss World, South County Dublin kind of privileged, beautiful girl and all that kind of thing and on the scene and everything. But she grew into this really substantial person who really has helped a lot of people by talking about her own struggles and everything.
She has, yeah. That book of hers, When Dreams Come True. And for me to see regularly the evidence of what she went through with three little, gorgeous little children, she would know the dark side of life. And by talking about it, I think she helped, as you say, a lot of people, particularly women, because miscarriage is something that doesn't just affect the woman, it affects the man as well. And so I would have great respect for Wes and what he went through during this extraordinary journey.
And as a dad, it's hard to see your little girl going through pain as well, isn't it?
Absolutely. I think if your listeners today were to actually get on the phone right now, you'd be overwhelmed by the number of people who actually know what it's like, both men and women.
Of course,
One thing I wanted to mention about earlier, I was talking about travelling the world. I've actually performed in something like 120 countries all over the world, and that learned, I learned a great deal about the way people are. I've performed, for example, a lot in Russia, been there multiple times, inside the Kremlin, half a dozen times, in Ukraine, in Kyiv, all over Ukraine.
Tell me about your insights about Russia.
Well, I won't go there again, that's the first thing.
Yeah.
One thing I do remember hearing and experiencing is that if you go outside of the main cities, people are just surviving. That's the one thing I would take from that. I've performed, for example, in Ephesus, where St. Paul preached to the Ephesians 300 years BC in this extraordinary arena under the stars and 20,000 people. And it was just awesome. You know, the whole of backstage areas as it was, they left it as a cultural heritage
place.
When
you talk about the sweep of history like that, and I know you studied history and everything, what does that teach you about the world?
Well, I have to say, I don't think we learn very much from history. It seems that every generation, every generation you'll get somebody coming through, like, for example, Putin, and there's something I did make a note of, which will make us smile, hopefully, is Spike Milligan. I want to talk about Spike Milligan.
Okay.
I never met the man, but he was an Irishman, as we know. Very funny comedian. and broadcaster, The Goon Show and so on. And in 1963, he published a book called Pakun, which, if you haven't read it,
yeah,
folks out there, is quite the funniest book ever written. And I remember when I was a student in Trinity, six or seven of us would sit around in a room trying to read one page without laughing. It's just hilarious. But in 1963, Spike Milligan wrote these words: "You can fool some of the people all of the time, and all of the people some of the time, which is just long enough to become President of the United States." Now, isn't that something?
Yeah. Can I go back to the rock star thing for a minute? You talked about leaving the rock star at the door. But you probably do have to have a big ego to be a performer, do you?
God, that's a tough question. I suppose you should ask yourself that question. I don't think ego. I think for me, this may sound trite, but I do believe I have a gift to make people happy. And at least twice or three times a week, I do videos for people who are getting married. For example, somebody just got married yesterday somewhere in Scotland. People whose parents have died, for example, and they want a little comfort at the funeral. This, whatever it is that I do, it seems to be a positive energy that I put through the music and possibly through my own personality. I just feel that life can bite you at any single moment, and being positive is so important.
Really, yeah.
And being kind. There's, you know, be kind. We're all trying to get through life as best we can.
Okay. What have you learned about money, Chris?
Money? Well, I have to remember and remind myself that I knew what it was like to have none. Although I speak with a plummy accent, and I was lucky enough to go to a British boarding school, that was because an aged aunt gave some money to my mum and dad just for that specific purpose, for education. Money is, it's like, for me, it's like a glass. Look, I'm holding up an RTE cup here. And what most people want to do is have enough in that glass for their own needs. So there's a little bit left over for friends, for sharing, for holidays and so on. But everybody's glass is different size. And I remember what it was like in the early days, struggling. 120 concerts around the world, meeting up with my management to say, well, is there any money? No, you lost money on that tour. I mean, stuff like that.
Really?
Oh, absolutely. I know exactly what it's like to be on the wrong end of really worrying about money. Luckily, I'm in a position now that doesn't apply. But it doesn't mean there's other issues in life that don't concern you. As you heard, we just talked about my daughter.
Yeah, yeah. In terms of career, I often think, is luck the most important thing in the world, or is hard work more important?
Well, let's go back to what that famous South African golfer said. The harder I practice, the luckier I become. And luck has got something to do with it, but I think Lady Luck, you have to wave at Lady Luck to make sure she's watching.
Yeah.
You have to raise your hand and say, here I am. I think if you hide in the shadows, it's not going to work. And I used to play golf quite a bit with Christy O'Connor Jr. Just such a lovely, charming, wonderful man. And if Anne, if you're listening, I loved your husband. He was such fun. And we had great fun, not just on the golf course, but off it. And he used to, if I hit a good shot, which was very rare, he used to literally jump up and down and shout and wave his arms and say, celebrate that. You have no idea how good that shot was. You're not supposed to hit a shot like that. We're the professionals, you're not. And I took that as a wonderful way of looking at life. Enjoy the moment. If something goes right, just enjoy the moment. Share it.
Yeah.
Celebrate. Thank you, Christy, for that wonderful bit of advice.
It's not often you'll hear a man profess love for his friends on the radio. Friendship is very important to you, is it?
Absolutely. I think most people have a core of just a handful of friends that they trust implicitly with anything that may happen. They're the ones who come to your home and say, you okay? I heard something that had gone wrong for you. I have actually four friends called Paul. My
Would I know any of them?
Yes, you do. You know Paul Howard.
Okay. You know. Really? He's one of your core...
I would call him a... Yeah. Paul McNeeve, who is a wonderful writer and written some thrillers, also very much involved in state agency and writes for the Irish Independent. Paul Farrow, who's a top knob in insurance. And Paul Byram, a wonderful singer, who currently I think is in America, doing a tour.
So they're your go-to guys?
Well, we tend to go to a restaurant together and talk about wine and politics and laugh a lot. And it's my wine club, you know. But these people I would certainly trust with every bit of information that come my way. Also, old friends, for some reason, I think most of us tend to stick with old friends the most. It's like that wonderful poem by W.B. Yeats. Though you are in your shining days, voices among the crowd and new friends busy with your praise, be not unkind or proud, but think of old friends the most. Time's bitter flood will rise, your beauty perish and be lost for all eyes but these eyes. And I just thought that was just a fantastic way of describing not just his love for a woman, but love for friendship. Think of old friends the most.
Yeah. For you, do you have to suss people out a lot before you trust them and let them into your life because you're Christa Berg?
Well, actually, you may find this strange, but I'm not Christa Berg. I'm actually Christopher John Davison. And luckily, I have two names. Christa Berg, when he's out there on tour, I am that person.
All right.
But when I come home, I'm the other guy. And I don't know. Interesting question. I mean, you're a celebrity in this country. But what do you feel about people coming to you? Do you think they're coming to you for a different reason? Brendan.
I know. Look, there's nobody going to get a good evening out with expensive wine out of me, Chris. I can imagine the wine at the wine club there now. When you mention old friends, it makes me think of aging, which we're all doing in various ways.
Yep.
How are you finding it, each different stage of aging?
I'm loving it.
Yeah.
I'm 76 now and I'm just loving it. Yeah. And I was sad to see that two men aged the same have both passed away recently, Eddie Jordan and George Foreman. I mean, this week, for example, I've walked from Dorkey to Dunleary four times, listening to stories and stuff, and just, I don't stroll along, I walk. When I was living in Enniskerry, I had an indoor pool, which I used a lot, I regret I don't have a pool now, but I love swimming.
Actually, we all regret we don't have a pool. Yeah, I know how it is. Yeah.
You know how it is, Brendan. But talking of EJ, I was in Melbourne.
He was a Palliers, wasn't he?
Yes, he was. Yeah. What a charismatic man. He could talk for Ireland, and he certainly did. I was in Melbourne on a tour, and I was introduced to Bernie Ecclestone, the boss of Formula One, who gave me a permanent pass, which was great. I could go to any race. And I always used to wind up in the Jordan, the paddock and all that sort of area. And Eddie Irvine also I met. He was a neighbour in Dorkey.
Yeah, he had a swimming pool as well, didn't he?
Michael Schumacher, Fisichella. I met all these guys. And through Eddie Jordan. And when I came into, like, for example, into Monaco for the Monaco Grand Prix, always used to go out to dinner with him the night before. And he was actually a fine drummer. I remember after one British Grand Prix, he said, come on, we're going to have a bit of fun. And he'd set up a sound system. And on lead guitar was, Damon Hill and Eddie on the drums and a few other luminaries. And I remember playing along Hotel California, and there was a great crowd there. And he said to me, you know what we should do? We should do everywhere in the world after every Formula One race. Eddie, I said, unfortunately, I have another career I can't do. But he said, okay. lovely man. Played golf with him. And I'm sorry, my deepest sympathies, and also from Diane to Marie and their four lovely children. We spent a holiday with them. We didn't go on holiday. We were in Mauritius, and they came to have a holiday, and we enjoyed their company very much.
Yeah. That's sad when your own peers start to go like that, and you start losing friends like that. Yeah. Chris, what's the biggest lesson you've learned about creativity?
creativity. I mean, I've written 330 songs, including a musical, Robin Hood, which is in German, by the way, and it's in German. It's doing fantastic business. This, I don't know, how do I describe it? I describe my head as a garden, if you don't mind.
Yeah, go on.
Seeds can sometimes blow in the wind and drop in. Things that you hear, ideas. Otherwise, I'm a very great believer in women's rights, and I've been to Iran. I was the first person to be given permission to perform in Iran by the Islamic Council. Went there. People, as always, the people were lovely in places like that. It's the rulers that you have to watch out for. So I put a seed in my head, and I want to write a song about this, which I did, called The Keeper of the Keys. The illusion is a woman in a prison, kept in prison by these mullahs, but one day she will be free. And that is one of the songs on an album that I put out last year called 50, one song from 26 albums that I'd recorded that I had to choose, and that would have been one of them. Because
so it tends to be a story.
It can be. Well, the great thing is, Spanish Train is an example. I was very much affected by John Milton's Paradise Lost poem. And about, I mean, okay. Satan was an archangel once. He was up there in heaven, and yeah, he was chucked out for bad behavior. And he's lying there staring up at, one day I'm going to get that bastard. He's staring up to heaven, you see.
Yeah.
And I thought the eternal fight between good and evil. And that's in all of us. I mean, those people who were guards and in the concentration camps, they went home to young families. And it's that switch off, which I find so disturbing in today's politics, is that lack of empathy, lack of compassion. And that's what I was trying to suggest in that song, Spanish Train.
Who knew that every party I ever went to in college, a guy would get out a guitar and do Spanish Train, and that we were actually doing Milton's Paradise Lost. Extraordinary.
When I it seems to be an iconic song in English-speaking churches, I suppose elsewhere, but also in Canada, where they described as the second national anthem. And
really,
on the recent tour, I just played that one chord. There's a Spanish train that runs between, and immediately everybody's like, ah.
Yeah, that must be a great feeling. Yeah. Any other tips for staying healthy as you age? I saw somewhere you have a cold shower every morning. Would you recommend that?
Not with me.
Good God, no. Although you'd have a few takers, I've no doubt.
Actually, this is a family trait. After a hot shower, take a cold shower because it actually stimulates your immune system. And I would also say, I heard a story, I heard one of your guests this morning talking about prostate cancer. It's inevitable. As a man gets older, the prostate gets harder, and we have to be aware of this. And it's so simple. I have to urge any man listening of an age to go and get a blood test. It's simple as that.
Your PSA
is risen, and then you can have the next part of the test, which is the rectal examination. And I used to say to my own doctor, if you're going to do that, I want flowers, I want cards, I want some chocolate.
Okay. All right. So, you're him. Give it to us again there, you first.
Ready?
Yeah.
Da 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 da.
Okay, so we have some suggestions.
Oh.
Loads of suggestions coming in. Will we start with The Day Thou Gavest Is Gone? Let's have a little... Could that be it?
Hallelujah!
That's it!
Woo-hoo!
And we should have kept that to the end. Is that it?
That's it!
You have made an old man very old and happy.
The day thou gavest is gone. Okay, I just wanted to give you one other option, okay? You seem fairly sure there, but let's just listen to the late, great Frank Patterson singing The Queen of the May.
Queen of the angels and
No. Sorry. True. And you'd know that one.
I'm very impressed with your research team.
Okay.
To come up with that. Thank you, whoever.
I think it was the hive mind of the listeners there. The day thou gavest is gone. And listen, indeed, the time thou gavest is gone as well. Krista Berg, can I say thank you so much for your open-heartedness, your generosity. Was there one more lesson there or anything that we didn't get to?
Something my dad used to say to me, who died on this day, 2001. So, Dad, if you're up there, thanks for this piece of advice. If a thing's worth doing, it's worth doing well.
Yeah, absolutely. Listen, for a man who claims to be bottling up his feelings since boarding school, they're very close to the surface there. And thank you for sharing with them with us. You're an absolute gentleman. Krista Berg, thank you so much. We'll take a break.